This is the Matt Report Podcast, a podcast for WordPress professionals, agencies, freelancers, consultants, users, community members. If you're interested in learning about the business side of WordPress, this is the place to be. If you're interested to have discussions, deep-rooted conversations about the community, where WordPress is going, and the business behind it all, it's MattReport.com. MattReport.com/subscribe. It's the number one way to stay connected. You're listening to Season 5. Hey, WordPress fans, this portion of the Matt Report is sponsored by Liquid Web. It's not if, but when you need improved performance, maximized uptime, and incredible support, Liquid Web is the partner you turn to. It's no secret that Liquid Web has been known as a web hosting company with a ton of plans to choose from, but they've also engineered a new managed WordPress offering perfect for mission-critical websites. And here's two bonuses. Number one, every managed WordPress customer includes iThemes Sync integration, perfect for freelancers and agencies who need single-click WordPress management capabilities. And number two, if you sign up today using this discount code, MattReport33, you'll get 33% off for the next 6 months. Visit liquidweb.com/WordPress to get started. That's liquidweb.com/WordPress and use the code MattReport33 to save 33% for the next 6 months. Season 5, episode number 4 with Devinder Singh Kaint of ProBeaver.com, a prominent figure in the Beaver Builder Facebook group. A lot of folks recommended that I get him on the show. And I'll be honest, this is the very first time he and I had had a real conversation aside from some emails back and forth. He started off a little coy, but 2 minutes in, this became one of my favorite episodes across all episodes of the Matt Report. I'll tell you, there's just so much good stuff in here. If you're a content marketer, if you're a product maker, if you're a freelancer working with clients, if you're a white label freelancer working for agencies, and we talk about that too, that's a part of his, the biggest part of his business and his revenue comes from these sort of white label services for agencies. We talk about positioning yourself and your pricing so you're not just a bottom dollar freelancer. He gets a lot of work from places like Odesk and things like that. It's just such a great conversation. Listening back to it during my editing, I just took away so many great items, wrote down some notes. It's good stuff. MattReport.com/subscribe. I'm not going to waste any more time. Let's get into the show. This portion of the Matt Report is sponsored by Beaver Builder. When you need a page builder that works effortlessly with your WordPress projects, doesn't get in the way of your team, and is a joy to use, you need Beaver Builder. Their team of passionate developers and designers have worked tirelessly to create a builder plugin that gives your WordPress website a big, comfy hug, not leaving it out in the cold. With an all-new version, including their 2.0 build plus themer capabilities just around the corner, Beaver Builder is leading the pack of page builder plugins in the WordPress space. So whether or not you need to just build a simple landing page or drag and drop the entire layout of your next marketing website project, Beaver Builder is the plugin for you. Check out their website, wpbeaverbuilder.com. That's WP, like WordPress, beaverbuilder.com. Hey, Devinder, welcome to the program.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for having me.
You do a lot of stuff. and I see you poking around the Beaver Builder Facebook group. And actually, Robbie had sort of dropped your name to say, you know, here's a guy that's doing, you know, all sorts of things from client services to products to educational material. And he's just really helping out in the Facebook group. I think he might be somebody that is a good value to talk to. So for folks who don't know who you are, who are you? And what do you do?
Yeah, I bump into a lot of corners in the online world. As far as a work is concerned, I do actually do a lot of things. I do client work, web design and development. I also do agency work. Besides that, there are a few digital products that I sell and the latest project on a niche WordPress product is like probeaver.com, which is based on the Beaver Builder plugin. As far as history goes, I started as a technology blogger almost 10 years ago and then transitioned into web design and development. So I've been there in the Genesis ecosystem for almost 4 or 5 years, and now slowly also adopting the Beaver Builder ecosystem.
We were sort of chatting beforehand and kind of getting, I was getting a feel for, you know, the work that you do. And, you know, obviously, just so people know, this is the first time we've sort of met. We've had some email back and forth just to get the show going, but I am super curious to dive into the stuff that you do. And here's one thing that I am always really curious about is sort of, you know, you mentioned that a good portion of your revenue comes from being the sort of back-end developer or the white label developer for a couple of agencies. How do you find agencies? How do agencies find you? How does that work in your world? Do you sort of knock on agency doors and say, hey, I'm the guy that can do stuff for you and I won't put any branding on it? Or do they come to you, you know, through some maybe marketing channels that you have? How does that work in your world?
Well, surprisingly, I have never approached any agency to hire me. Actually, when I was doing the blogging part, like almost like 6-7 years ago, I made a conscious decision, like, blogging, you know, you can only do for a certain period of time, and after that the boredom kicks in. So I went into
I totally understand that. Totally understand that.
And while I was blogging, I was designing. I was pretty good at Photoshop, and I was designing and customizing my own themes. I was using Revolution themes from Brian Gardner, and then transitioned into Genesis as and when it was launched, like a few years ago. And at that time, actually, I was also, you know, struggling to find the foothold. Like, I used to read a lot of articles like how to, you know, get clients and all that. This is a very popular topic among blogs, you know, get clients, make X amount of dollars in one day, etc., etc. So what I did, like majority of people would advise you, go to the marketplaces. I started on freelancer.com and Odesk, which is now called Upwork. And all those agencies that I work today, actually, I got the first contact on these platforms. So...
And do you still recommend, so if somebody's listening to this and maybe they're in your shoes and they're saying, boy, how do I get my feet wet with getting my first clients, or how do I find a first handful of clients because I'm just starting out? Do you still recommend those channels, like going to Odesk and you know, that sort of like hiring platform?
Absolutely. Odesk, thumbs up. But Freelancer, you will find a lot of, you know, cheap stuff being posted and a lot of spam stuff being posted. So I would advise to avoid freelancer.com, but definitely Odesk. Yes, you need to be careful about, you know, which project you're bidding and which task you're bidding. You should be at least minimal qualified to, you know, do that work. And you can even try Fiverr if a person who is looking to find a work is not competent enough to, you know, do the full hog in the web development, like doing small bits and pieces, like doing voiceovers, making vector graphics and all that. This is just a start. It's just, you know, the real business comes from communication and networking, not from your portfolio sites.
Yeah, I mean, that's so true. So we were talking before the show and we had, you know, we chatted about like, are we going to have some surprise questions? And so one of the questions that I have, and, mm-hmm. you know, honestly, you know, when I present this question, I don't want to sort of insult you or sort of, you know, make you feel bad, but mm-hmm. a lot of folks that I listen to in the podcasting world, like internet marketers and non-technical people who are sort of building, you know, WordPress plugins, but they don't know anything about code, right? They don't know anything about WordPress, but they're out there building these software platforms for people and they're just selling it. And when I listen to their advice, they're always saying, well, I'm just going to go to Odesk and hire the cheapest person I can get. And, you know, they're always about sort of outsourcing for the lowest bottom dollar. How do you combat that in your world? Do you have a sort of, you know, like this onboarding you know, material that maybe you reverse onto the client, like to find out if they're just looking for the cheapest, you know, price. How do you combat that in your world of getting these outsourcing deals?
You know, there's a very popular saying, cheap can be expensive in long run. You got to explain this to everyone, you know, you deal with. And it's all about building relationship one after the other project. Obviously, you are not going to start with $5,000 project. It's always the $1,000, even $500 project. So it all boils down to the value that you give to the client. Here, the client being the middleman, the people who run their design studios and design agencies, but they don't have the technical chops to do and deliver the projects. So you just can't say, like, if, for example, I'm working for, say I'm doing development for $2,000, and that's a simple website, and next day, a next project that the same person brings in for me is an e-commerce site, it's my obligation that I shouldn't do it for $2,000, because it's an e-commerce site. The whole, you know, the quote level or the estimate level changes. But then there's a trust factor, and you know, you have to have the room for flexibility when you're working with the middleman. So I guess it's all about being flexible, and I'm sure that's not a surprising answer, but right, that's how it is.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, but it's surprising because it's sort of good to, it's just, you know, it's good to hear that you are taking those steps to build a community. And that is not to say that people who simply do business on Odesk are looking to do, you know, cheap, fast and get work done and sort of make like this, you know, factory of code that they're pushing out. Because there are a lot of agencies here in the US that do that and they're not on, you know, the world of Odesk, you know. And the other surprising thing is, do you get a sense of that type of cheap customer that might be coming to you through one of those channels? And maybe you're not doing that work, or maybe you're not getting those leads anymore on Odesk because you've sort of elevated yourself and you've elevated your portfolio. But back in the day when you were getting those, I mean, again, I listen to this advice from people and they say things like, you know, put out 20 projects to, you know, to the lowest bidder and get them to do the work. Like, can you see that stuff coming at you from a distance and being like, no, I'm not even gonna deal with this person and I'm just gonna reject it? Do you see that in your world?
Yes, that's a normal phenomena. If you're, you know, on the Odesk platform, you will be bombarded with, you know, cheap proposals. So I'm not saying you should use Odesk as your permanent stay to get clients. You should use it as a stepping stone to network with people who will give you regular work. I would suggest, you know, avoiding those people who are actually getting you to build their own website, because that would be a one-off project and you will be like exploited to an extent in that project. But if you are dealing with them, and you tell me like you just said that a lot of agencies in US or even other countries don't actually come to Odesk, but that's not true. They actually come to Odesk for phishing, to get the right kind of, you know, developers and all that. And even the agencies I first made a contact on Odesk, they no longer post their projects on Odesk because I am on their team as a regular. So it saves their time, you know, and time is money.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's just, I'm glad I could finally talk to somebody that has experience with that platform, but not only experience, but, you know, sort of knows how to perform well with it. I mean, because I will tell you that, I mean, a few years ago, I listened to these other folks and they talk about growing their agencies and what happens when you get more work in and all of a sudden you're in a pinch to get some projects delivered. I mean, I've turned to Odesk before and I have had no results from any of the projects. And it could be the way that maybe, again, and maybe you can tell me the trick here, but maybe it was the way I presented the work. But man, I put together highly detailed, you know, documents that say, here's exactly what we're looking for. I mean, I have an in-house development team, so they even wireframe some of this stuff and it's all presented well. And then like the people that look at it, they're, you know, I've tried to engage in a project from them and they just don't get it right at all. It's totally wrong. There's lack of communication and it just goes down the drain pretty fast with some of the experiences that I've had.
Yeah, actually, previously, the whole thing was a little vague for a person who is posting the project and people who were bidding for the project. Now they have actually improved on it. I haven't actually logged into my Odesk account for almost a year now, but ever since I left it, I think they introduced two, you know, three stages. Like, first, you can hire at a cheap price with less experience, or one step higher price with moderate experience, or the third was like paying the premium price for the most experienced person. So, and they have actually started categorizing things. And recently, I think almost like 2 years ago, Upwork and Elance both got merged into Upwork. So there's a bigger pool of, you know, people who are highly qualified to do and deliver projects. So,
yeah. I mean, maybe it's time I take a look at it again. I mean,
yeah, no harm trying again.
Yeah. Awesome. I want to now shift gears to the digital products and the content that you produce. But before you do that, before we get into that, I want to know how you sort of set your day or your week or your month on managing, you know, client work that you do with the agencies and then producing all of the sort of content and digital products. Like, how do you schedule that in? How do you balance that? Because that's something that I do. And I am constantly trying to figure out a good way to sort of manage client services and products and content. So how do you do it?
Well, I just manage it. And how do I manage it? Well, it's tough to explain, but the thing is I have a fixed, you know, working hours. Like, I actually don't work on a I don't work for more than 2 hours on a stretch. I have like I work from home, so I don't spend time traveling. I have my family here, so I actually sleep late at night and I wake up late in the morning because I have to adjust my my work, you know, few work hours with the Australian time zone as well as the US time zone, because half of my clients are in Australia and half of them in US. So that's how it is. As far as the products go, you know, if you are building a big scope product, I would always suggest that you get a partner who can, you know, complement your skills, not supplement your skills. For example, Simple Pro Themes, that the custom Genesis themes shop that I have, it is basically in partnership with another person, and we actually complement each other really well because things my partner loves to do, I don't love it, but I can do it, and things he doesn't like to do, I love to do it. So
What's one example of that he likes to do and you don't, and vice versa?
I'm more of a packaging, branding and marketing person, and my partner sucks at that. But my partner is but my partner is awesome at writing code. He's Chinmay Kumar Paul. He's also from India, but a different part of India. And I met him online. We have never met face to face in real life yet. And he is an awesome person in writing code, but he just don't have any design sense because that's not his interest. So
I hope he's not listening to this episode.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you guys haven't met in person yet. India is such a small place, so I've heard.
Well, it's not. It's very big place.
Yeah. So would you say, what's your estimate on maybe the time spent doing the client work and then the time spent doing all of your other stuff? Is it like a 50-50 split or 60-40? How does that all break down?
I think 60-40, and that 40% also includes, you know, working on my personal blogs and writing content. And I do it not out of obligation or just because I have to do it. I actually enjoy it. Even the client work I do, I really enjoy it. I actually don't consider it as work. So it's seamless.
Yeah. I mean, it's an amazing mindset because so many people... here's this question now that you say that. How do you get into that mindset? Because so many people find themselves so overwhelmed when they start their their freelance, you know, gig. Maybe they start doing it on the side and they have a day job, but then they transition out of their day job and now they're, you know, doing WordPress stuff full time. And then they find themselves sort of almost hating the work because they feel so, you know, burdened to the client, and or the client feels a burden to them, and they just feel so overwhelmed with work to do that they end up not enjoying it. So how did you find that happy balance?
You know, it was easy for me because I made a transition from being a blogger to a web development person. And while I was making that transition, I didn't have to worry about the money factor because I was making more than enough from blogging at that time when I was making the transition. So I could just spend my time in learning things, because when you're new, you don't know how to do things, yet you want work to do. You are seeking work which you haven't done before. So, you know, the one thing I would advise anyone to get into freelance gig, at least you should have a plan B, because, you know, money is important. And because if there's no money, you, even if you enjoy something, it won't last.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, it is the life of the business, you know, to a degree. I spent a lot of times mentoring in a local accelerator group, and it's just amazing to see people come in to this accelerator, and their business, they're not all tech businesses by any stretch of the imagination. Some people are, you know, some people are doing like, you know, like pet stores, and other people are doing bakeries. It totally varies, but it's amazing to see people come in and they even at the end of the accelerator, talking to a few of them the other day, they're like so caught up on, well, what's my logo going to be? What's the branding going to be? What's the website going to be? You know, and it's like, you need to start selling today, because without that, it doesn't matter. You could spend all this time picking out your theme and you haven't sold anything yet. Like, you need to go out and sell.
The perfectionist bug. We all have it. We want to perfect it. But I guess just launch it and perfect it while it's there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't want to go, I hate to circle back to the agency stuff, but one thing that I just wrote down was, you say you're not sort of a back-end developer. You're much more of the marketing sort of web developer, which I find as an interesting twist and something that I feel like a lot of tools like a Beaver Builder, the Divi and Elementor, they're really taking away the need to really know the real down and dirty coding. But a marketer or somebody who knows how these pieces come together can put together very powerful websites. So is that something that you're doing as the day job? Like, you're not actually writing lines of code, but you're much more of a sort of bringing a marketing twist to things and sort of doing front-end development to a degree?
Traditionally, I am a developer. I do development out of necessity to, you know, get the money flow going, because that's my actual job. But I'll enjoy designing. I love to know how things work on the marketing end. I keep experimenting, you know, launching niche sites to just get feel of things, because in online world, you got to, you know, put forward the product, put forward the website to see how it will, you know, work. You just can't read a blog and say, okay, this will work this way. It won't, because every, you know, every creation in the online world, you know, gives a different return. As far as the code part is concerned, and the Beaver Builder and page builders in general, I think they are helping people and even clients. I'll give you an example. Like, when I was working on an agency project, we normally do custom Genesis theme, which is like everything is almost hard coded and clients have hard time even, you know, editing few lines here and there. So what we did, we experimented, we used Genesis as a base, but we built the pages. We didn't build the homepage in the Beaver Builder. We built the homepage like the normal Genesis theme, but we built the internal pages using Beaver Builder. And guess what? Client was super happy, and this was not just with one client. We actually tried it with few clients and they were so happy. And guess what? Those set of clients came back to us like almost 6 months later, that can you build the homepage in the Beaver Builder, because I have hard time, you know.
Right.
So yeah. Now we actually built a whole of the site in the Beaver Builder.
Yeah, I mean, it, you know, I look, I, there's people who have been listening to me for a while, I mean, they know sort of my stance. I mean, I have a plugin called Conductor, and it's at one point it was sort of confused as a page builder, partly my fault. But I'm hoping to sort of set the record straight with that as we get launch a new site and sort of fix all this stuff up. But I'm really starting to see that even with our own themes, you know, no longer are there, at least this is my own theory, is I don't call multi-purpose themes anymore, right? I don't think they exist anymore. I think you either have a builder theme, like a complete start from scratch, like the Beaver Builder Pro theme, where it's just a blank canvas and you can go and build it. And then you have feature themes, like themes that are you know, doing something specific. And then, oh, by the way, it works really well with Beaver Builder to build those internal pages or the homepage, like you mentioned. You know, I don't think that the multi-purpose theme still exists like it used to a couple of years ago. I think now we're finding ourselves with these themes that are, you know, much more focused in the content that it delivers. But you're going to use that design and then use Beaver Builder to change up maybe the layout. So I don't know if that makes sense the way I explained it there, but I have a whole video about it.
Yeah, exactly. That I talked about. You know, theme ecosystem, theme market changes every few years. There was a time when I was blogging Thesis. I don't know if you remember Thesis.
Oh yeah, sure do. That was one of my second themes I've ever bought was Thesis.
That was called the SEO guru, the SEO mastermind, the SEO king. People would advertise it. Just install Thesis theme and write useless content and your site will be number one in Google. That was like how it was marketed. And then Thesis went away, Genesis hogged the limelight, and it's still one of the best, you know, framework available in the WordPress ecosystem. And now, and during that period, a lot of people, you know, who run their design studios, agencies, you know, they do not develop themes. They just buy them pre-made from ThemeForest and other marketplaces and, you know, slap them, put the client logo and done, the site is done. Now things have changed, at least they are changing. People don't buy, I don't see them buying ThemeForest theme and people saying, okay, I bought this theme, this is not working, this is broken. Now people are more talking about, okay, I've got the new page builder installed, it doesn't have this module, can you make the module, you know? So that's the talk these days.
Yeah, I mean, and it's amazing, it's an amazing shift. I want to take us down a path of talking about the communities around these page builder plugins. And I don't know if you've spent any time, you know, looking at, you know, what goes on in sort of the Divi groups and the Elementor groups versus the Beaver Builder groups, that kind of thing. But I've been spending a little time sort of evaluating all sort of three, if not more. People are super, super passionate about these plugins. You know, when I first started my new tutorial channel on YouTube, I did an unboxing of Divi, and it was like the very first time I had ever used it, which is, you know, apparently a sin to do that without learning how, you know, without reading the documentation fully. But I did it like a typical user would. They buy it, they install it, and they start playing with it. And I just recorded what happened, and I had some troubles with it. And people came out of the woodwork, like ready to, you know, attack me because I couldn't figure it out. But they're just loyal Divi users, and I totally get it now that I've spent some time in the page builder space. How do you see that from your perspective? I mean, this software is really empowering people. I'd say even more than WordPress empowers people. What are your thoughts?
Well, you're absolutely right. There are Democrats and Republicans in, you know, Republicans in page builder as well. And Divi, personally, I don't like Divi page builder, but Divi has, I think, the biggest community of users, and they will defend every, you know, talk of Divi being not a good page builder. And, you know, these communities, people are very loyal to these communities. And I'll give you an example. Like, I am more active in Beaver Builder community, and I joined the Elementor page builder Facebook group, and I was welcomed with a sentence, okay, another deserter is here. So I just replied, okay, I'm not deserting anyone. I'm just here to spy on Elementor people. So,
it's amazing.
Yeah, it's fun and games, you know. there are people who use both of them. There are people who are loyal to one platform. I think if you're building client sites, you should stick to one platform. But if you are just doing it for your own site and experimenting, obviously you can try all kinds of page builders. They are like every day a new one pops in.
Yeah. You know, I posted a video today talking about this, because within the Facebook group of Beaver Builder, I saw somebody leave a comment or a post one day, and she had asked about sort of hiding all the names of a theme, the names of a plugin, because she was afraid that people were, one, going to sort of look at it and say, oh, you didn't do it right, or, oh boy, you used a page builder to build this page. And sort of, you know, maybe at some degree, there's a little bit of embarrassment to that. And there's like maybe this fear of, well, if one of my local competitors sees me use this stuff, then they're going to start using it too. I think that's crazy, but I'd like your thoughts on that.
Well, if you're embarrassed on using WordPress, go learn Joomla and burn your brain. Simple.
That's a very, very well stated point.
You know, as such, you know, it's developers or people who know what is Elementor, what is Beaver Builder, what is DV. We are only iffy and itchy about these things. And user client doesn't even know what WordPress is. Forget about talking about page builders. This is the biggest mistake a lot of us do when we start the direct client work. When a person comes to you, I need a new website, and we start ranting our technical stuff. Okay, I'll use X theme. No, I'll use Beaver theme. No, I'll use Genesis. Okay, I'll use this page builder. Client doesn't understand any of that thing, you know. They just want a website.
Right, right. You know, and what's going to be, and I say this all the time too, I hate the word interesting, but the thing that's going to be interesting is WordPress implementing their own builder type experience, you know, as lightweight and as sort of, you know, the 30,000 foot view of a page builder. Mm-hmm. But they're getting that sort of, you know, blocks content concept rolled in to core at some point. It's going to be interesting to see how these two experiences live alongside of each other and how that affects the viewpoint of the end user, who then, you know, might have a website built by somebody who uses page Beaver Builder, but then also says, well, what about this sort of blocks thing that I can do with WordPress out of the box? Why am I not using that? It's going to be real interesting to see those experiences touch each other.
Yep. They have to do it, because, you know, a lot of people who are actually ready to pay money and spend money in WordPress ecosystem are migrating to platforms like Wix, Squarespace, and they offer that kind of experience. But for people like us who are like purist developers, we think that Wix is a very bad platform for SEO. The code looks bad. It's very bad. But for a person who just runs a small cafe and needs a small 2-page or 3-page website, it doesn't matter.
Right. Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's interesting to see all of this stuff playing out, and you know, I would say, and I've been on record to say this before, I think Matt Mullenweg is a little afraid of that to a degree. There's some fear in there from these larger platforms getting their marketing so much better, reaching more people, Super Bowl ads, if you're into the NFL in the US.
Yes, and the end result is, these days when I watch YouTube videos, earlier I used to see Wix ad, now I see WordPress.com ad, which is similar to Wix. I was surprised to see it for the first time. Like, why the hell are they advertising here? Do they even earn money?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's definitely going to, I'm excited to see where that plays out. And I really hope that, and this is going down a rabbit hole I probably don't want to go down, but I really hope that it's not sort of leaving the .org community behind, and the forward thinking is much more about .com, because it's the moneymaker.
Exactly.
I mean, that's a whole other discussion. But I'm interested now, sort of, again, you know, looking at all the stuff that you're doing. You mentioned that you experimented before, and you experiment a lot on sort of maybe like these, you know, niche sites or micro sites that you kind of launched. Do you have any lessons from that? you know, that maybe you've launched something that you spent, you know, 3 months working on and it was just an absolute failure, like something you don't mind sharing that we can use as a lesson of something that maybe you've launched? Or is everything you launched sort of still up and running and doing well for you?
No, I had a lot of failures. I think when I was, you know, starting with the design and development, I was also swayed with, you know, trying the affiliate marketing route. I had already done and dusted with the Google AdSense part. I made a lot of money out of it, but the itching point using Google AdSense is that you are 100% dependent on Google. So they can change any rule, they can change the algorithm, and you are thrown from sky any day. So I was interested in trying affiliate marketing at that time, and I did read a lot of books, online books, done few e-courses, and majority of them would suggest you to find a profitable niche to start a website with. And I did start a website. It was, you know, very interesting topic, selling portable potty seats for small kids, for infants, and I did start the site. I like wrote few core articles, you know, how, which is the best potty seat, which is the best portable traveler seat, how to keep it clean and all that. And to my surprise, I did make few, you know, sales out of it. It was like I used to link Amazon products on that site, and people would just buy the Amazon products and I'll get the commission. But it was more of a learning experience. If you really want, the foundation was absolutely correct, but it was a failure because I just could not keep it up, you know, putting that effort and content on a daily basis, because I had my eyes set on the bigger picture of design and development. So it was a good learning experience.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I mean, I started, you know, I'm just dipping my toes into finally using affiliate links with some of the trusted WordPress products that I recommend and use, you know, like a Beaver Builder, like Gravity Forms, like Ninja Forms, that kind of thing.
Glad you made that point, because I have been running a WordPress based blog for a long time and I didn't make any affiliate sales. However, ever since I started probeaver.com, I think I've made so much out of affiliate. I could never imagine how I make that much money from affiliate sales. I think the bottom line is, if you do something with your heart in it, you will find success. And none of the affiliate marketing guru e-course tutorial video will tell you that point.
Yeah. Well, that's good to hear, because I was about to say that my affiliate sales suck. So I'm glad that you found success with it. But I should also say that, look, I mean, I literally just, you know, got into this stuff, and I am still just sort of sprinkling my, I do a lot more with, you know, YouTube now and my podcast. I'm doing a lot, and blogging and writing, while I enjoy it, I don't feel like I'm the best at it, and it just takes so much time. I would rather do videos and, you know, live shows and audio podcasts. I feel much more comfortable doing that, and I feel much more comfortable getting it done than, say, you know, a 1,000-word blog post every day, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's all depends on the person. For me, audio is not the comfortable zone.
Yeah.
Writing is, but you never know.
Yeah. We chatted real quick, again, before the show, and you mentioned something about pricing and you priced a particular product, at, you know, what was, you know, arguably double, if not three times, the price of the standard market rate. Take us down that path. How did you sort of come up with, pricing, that product, and any sort of takeaways from that and what you've learned in the pricing world of things?
Be confident in what you price your product, because you are the one who knows the value of your product till it is sold and someone else tries it out. So the example I was giving you was for simpleprothemes.com, where we made two Genesis child themes, At the time when we launched that theme shop, the standard Genesis theme would cost around $50, but we launched our theme with two plans. One was the personal plan for $79, and the other one was developer plan that was $199. And we just added the developer plan for the just for the sake of trying it. So let's see how if the market responds positively to it, and it did. Even though we didn't clock like huge numbers, but almost 50% of sales that we made on that site was for developer license, and majority of people who were buying those developer license were people who run design studios and agencies. So they end up paying $199 for one Genesis theme. Why? Yeah. Because no, they can use it on multiple client projects.
Right, right. You know, and I think that you know you're 100% right. I mean, even in the case of my plugin Conductor, I dropped the $49 plan, which was, yeah, I forget what I called it. I think I called it the blogger plan, and it came, you know, for one site and one add-on. But it would only bring in the worst customers.
Exactly.
You know, the
and they will ask you more questions.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The developer plan that I had.
They really
continue to have. They didn't win. It was like Scott and I, my lead developer on Conductor. Sometimes we would look at each other and be like, what is going on? Like, nobody asks us any questions when they buy this for $399. I don't understand. It's almost scary. And then the $49 person is asking you about, you know, every single thing, and then asking you about like supporting their slider plugin on their website. It's like, come on, like, we don't even do that. It's amazing, the pricing stuff. Do you have any plans to launch more themes out of the Simple Pro Shop?
Well, we have one almost ready, 90% done, but we are not sure if we're going to launch any new themes for Genesis platform. We do have plans for making Beaver Builder themes, but we are waiting for their new plugin that they are going to release that is called Themer, Beaver Themer, which is basically a mashup of ACF and CMB toolset. Basically, you can build templates that can serve dynamic content using Beaver Builder. So we are keeping eye on it. So let's see how it pans out.
I am interested to learn from you as well. How long does it take? Like in this third theme that you're sort of, you know, pondering whether or not you're going to launch it. How long has that sort of development taken for you? And how do you come up with a new theme with your partner? Is it something that you just, you know, have a chat and you say, boy, this would be a great theme to pursue and let's go ahead and build it? Or do you take from experiences, you know, with your client work and you say, boy, that was cool that we did that over there. Let's make it out of a theme on this side.
100% experience, you know. When you do a lot of sites on month-on-month basis, you know what's in demand, what people are looking for. They want a big header in the top, or they want the transparent header part, or they want the slider part. Because the first theme that we launched, we had even a slider built in within the theme, and we did get few negative feedback that it's a Genesis theme and you have made it look bloated by adding a slider into it. But that is the best seller for us.
I love that. I love the fact that there are people that say the way it's, you know, the way it should be, right? Like, this is the way it's always been done. Like, you know, why would you do it any differently? You know, and then you do it differently and you prove them wrong. I love that. I just, you know, there's no real statement. It's just a statement, right? There's no question in that. I mean, I just love, I mean, that's what I do. Like, I do things that, you know, that don't scale, you know, that I try things over and over again that, you know, fail miserably. And I just, you know, use that as a lesson to talk about. And I always question, you know, the status quo. So I'm glad that you do as well.
Yep. Because you are making products not for your fellow developers. You're making products for end user customer. So as such, they are Absolutely. Not going to buy your product because they can build themselves.
What are you most excited for in your business for the rest of 2017? Is it continuing to make great content? Is it another sort of product in the works? What's really getting you going for your business for the rest of this year?
Well, my bucket list is very long. And but, you know, I made this conscious decision. Like, I do a lot of client work and agency work. I want to have a healthy mix of services and products. I'm already there in the services part, but I want to get a notch up in the products, digital products, as well as the income that comes from affiliate sales or direct sales. So that is the part I'm working on. I have a plan for an e-course, and you know, I've actually recently restarted writing on my WordPress blog, basicwp.com, and I have a content plan ready for that. So let's see how things pan out, because thing you write today, it will give you result like 6 months down the line. That's how content works.
Yeah, that is definitely a lesson that I've learned. You know, you publish something and you know, for like recently having this experiment with plugintut.com, and I was trying to blog every single day and do everything else that I'm doing in my life, and I only got 26 days out of January, but 130% increase in traffic, but I know that was just for then. It's hopefully going to sort of be evergreen, you know, 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, a year down the road. And that's the lesson that I've learned is, you know, they're not all going to come right now. It's not going to be this massive, explosive rush of traffic, but in the future it will be.
Exactly.
Devinder, this has been one of the best interviews I've ever done. I have to say that in closing. There's probably a million other questions I'd love to ask you, but we're hitting sort of the time limit here. Where can folks find you on the web to say thanks?
Well, I'm on Twitter, twitter.com/iTheWinder. The same ID on Facebook. They can catch me on probeaver.com, simpleprothemes.com, iguiding.com, basicwp.com. Oh God, I have so many sites.
Let me tell you something. You are just like me, and I just registered before this phone call. craftedbymatt.com, and it's going to be all of the products and services that I create, because it's just like I have websites all over the place. I need one place to send somebody to say, here, just choose what you want me to do for you. Like, here it is, just go get it.
It can be tough. We are in the same boat.
Yeah. You have an awesome lineup of products and services. It's been a pleasure to meet you and to talk to you. Everybody else, it's mattreport.com/subscribe. It's the number one way to stay connected. That was another episode of The Matt Report. I hope you learned something. I hope you got something out of it. It means a lot when somebody actually learns something from the conversations that I have here, either personal gains or business gains, whatever it might be, just learning your way in the crazy world of WordPress. That's why I do it. I couldn't do it without my audience. I couldn't do it without my sponsors as well. So please go ahead and thank the sponsors. Use the services that I've mentioned in these episodes. I really vet them and make sure that they're only putting out good products with great support, and they really care about the WordPress community. That's why I've chosen them. So it means a lot if you go ahead on Twitter and tell them that you heard them on the Matt Report podcast. As always, mattreport.com/subscribe to join the mailing list. It's the number one way to stay connected. I send private videos there to my newsletter. It's really becoming much more than just a boring old newsletter, so I hope I can see you over there. And the best thing that you can do for the show is head on over to iTunes, search for WordPress Podcast, leave me a 5-star review. If you enjoy the episode, I'd really appreciate it. We'll see you in the next episode.